This is Manisha Roy, November 7th, 1992. After Initiation, Tape 3 of 3.
It's like maybe like the scene in the movie Baby, you know, the thing seen that, where they put the quarter in. So the juggler's juggling, and the boys think they're doing it. And then finally the juggler stops. He's back in the same position he was in before. And the dream was like a dream within a dream within a dream. And I felt like I was watching a foreign movie, and there were very colorful images, and it was so vivid. It wasn't directly connected to some of the decisions I was making at the time, but it sort of was a predecessor, and it seemed to follow the direction of it's very important creatively. And so I knew that I was working with this theme of the juggler and began doing some paintings of it. So when I was sitting in there, I thought, I'll go back to the juggler. I've been doing it then, quite a few drawings of the juggler. And so as I drew it, I thought I saw this juggler in the tree. And then I thought, well, the juggler is sitting in the tree. And then he was sitting in the tree, and then the tree, I don't know if you can see it very well, but the tree limbs, there's sort of leaves around him, and he's in the dream he's juggling three golden balls. and then I started realizing as I drew it, then the rest of it, once I sort of became a little more right brain, you know, ego had a chance to get aside. Then the rest of it, then I could see when it was all finished that the original painting 2 years ago was starting to break up and move. So it's not like I know what it means, but if you can see even the snake in the original painting, now it's just sort of hanging down. And in the original painting, it was all sort of wrapped up tight around the tree. The painting was much more, the image was much more static. The angel used to be up here, now she's down here. And the sun is here, and the moon is here. And some of the elements of the snake, and I kept feeling like I wanted to sort of judge it and say, oh, well, here I am just repeating something. But I guess I wanted to trust that.
Suspend the judgment.
Yeah, so I still don't hear it.
Well, the juggler is the central theme of your vision and dream and painting. Juggle. And of course, I don't know any group of people do more juggling than the American women. Constant juggling of the work, family, love, non-love, singlehood, motherhood, marriagehood, juggling. And the values, too.
And what the words were was the roots of the hair are the tree, and the roots of the tree are her hair.
But something interesting about juggling. When you juggle, there's nothing. There is no stability. Nothing can be stable at one place. Mm-hmm. It's a constant balancing act.
That's the circle of the ball. Go ahead.
There's a circle involved. But then you have to also know how to stop sometime and get out of it. So juggler is... And we cannot live in archetype. We have to... That can come to our life occasionally. But we are humans. And we're neither angels. Interesting, even angel there. We're neither angel or not the archetype, because angel is non-human. So these are, angel can be an archetype too in a way. So humans have to deal with the possibility of angelic, demonic, archetypal, all these. But I think juggling is not as much a mechanism as to live it, to be in it.
And in the original painting, yeah, she was in the upper right and had sort of reddish blonde hair. She was blowing a trumpet, she
mm-hmm.
And in this one, it's definitely a woman.
The angel,
coming down to the ground.
Yeah, interesting. Any other?
For me an image of outer face, if you will, as a cup. And then as it grew and it got more and more defined, it couldn't support itself in the middle. So I took it apart and made a new form out of it. And that triggered for me the issues that you were talking about in terms of surprise, being ready for surprise, being open to moving where life is going to take you. And I think that certainly has been an issue for me in my life, and struggling with being able to do that, and with rigidity. It felt good to be able to do that, either without guidance or trepidation.
So you want to see us the form, or? Looks very much like a tropical flower, a trumpet flower. That's right, our cornucopia too. It's an interesting combination, masculine, feminine style. Thank you. So, who goes next? Don't feel badly if you don't want to. By the way, in this collection, it's interesting, I was looking at them last night, which one to pick, and almost all of them seem to have, the foreign ones, seem to have a wise old hermit, and the Chinese, the Indian. It's interesting that the wise old guide at the midlife and the old age seems to be a collective situation in some cultures very clearly, and that's the fatherless sons in the West. They're looking for that father. So,
well, at first there was the image of the tree because it was so strong in the story, but it changed and it became a forest because the forest grew as more than just one type of plant. You know, there's all the different aspects. And of course, to me, it's rejuvenation, it's also peace, quiet, introspection, fields. I did have that water, and it was fire in the middle, and there was steam coming up. But then I drew a book that was suspended over the hardest part of the water. It's just kind of floating up there. At first it started out being a tool, and then it changed into a book. And then I started making a rock underneath the water. And I think I'm sitting there wondering what's going on. I think probably the answer is the book that was printed above the hot water. But I think it did very far, but
it did quite a bit. Do you want to show, is it hard to see?
Well, this is one of those kind of
crayons.
Sticks that would really look like had water.
It's lovely, it has a nice perspective. Anybody wants to tell her why the book is suspended above the hot water?
Why is it?
Or whatever you fantasize about it. You don't know anything about her, I presume.
Oh, no, I put a lot of information on travel.
Okay. then you cannot project. You know already, okay.
Why is it a story? Then you have to put on special shoes to get out.
That's right. Well, you're not a good person then. Anybody who doesn't know her wants to say what might be that image talking in general?
Suspended.
Why is the book suspended?
Yeah.
No, everything is personal and transpersonal.
But I mean, it just seems like there might be some knowledge or some information that's worrisome to get because under his top order.
No, it's more like that, the
carrot
that somebody wants.
It's something which keeps us going. And she's not even interested in getting there maybe directly, but it keeps us as a light to follow.
Yeah.
That's the carrot. And the carrot, you know the purpose of the carrot, because you usually, if you remember the contraption, you can't get to it, but it makes you move. So the knowledge, if it's right, what is a book? A book doesn't have to be knowledge, but what's the specialty of a book? What does a book, there are many ways of communicating. It's a storage of an information. Of course, nowadays we have tapes and videos and computers, but originally books were, have you seen a movie by Truffaut, what was it called? Where the books were burned? Yes, Fahrenheit 451. And all the books were burned because in this society they wanted to terminate all the information to be handed down to the next generation, because that's how we read. We read Tolstoy, and we read something about his time. So book was the only way to preserve and conserve information and knowledge. So if it is hanging, maybe the knowledge is, the idea of the knowledge is important, not what it says directly. So, but the other point, since you reacted to the story, is the shoe that you need to, if you want to get to the book, then you'll find the shoes which belong to the wise side. But shoes, very interesting image, because shoes come up in mythologies, shoes come up in dreams constantly, in women's dreams in midlife. It's very common that they have gone to the bathroom or gone to somewhere and took the shoes off, and when they come back, they can't fit into the shoes, or one shoe is there, other shoe is gone. Now in India it happens all the time, literally, because we take off our shoes when we get to the house because it's very dusty and hot, like in Japan, or in front of the temple. And then when we come back, the shoe thieves, they just wait for shoes to be taken out. People take shoes away. So you really literally look for shoes. But in mythological images, shoes, Hermes gave his shoes to Perseus, to kill Medusa. And shoes, the fairy tale called the Glass Maiden, she needed shoes, he, the hero, put on shoes which can make him invisible. So shoes are extremely important symbolic material. And of course, in this story, you wear it to get wet through the hot water. So what is shoe? We need shoes for what? Okay.
So that many cultures have a story about you mustn't judge someone until you walk in their shoes. So you can be in someone's life on that level, that's one.
Very simply, what do we need shoes for? To protect our feet so that we can walk. So what you said, I would go a little in, is not the path as much as but something to use the path with, to go into the path. So it can be standpoint also. Shoe and teeth are two very important symbols in dreams. Teeth. Because teeth have to do, people have dreams like they have three rows of teeth or teeth falling down and teeth. And they say, what does that have to do with anything? So, and shoes are the same way. We can see some obvious symbols, but there's some lot more to it. It can be also standpoint, it can be attitude, standing on. So shoes, standing on something. Teeth, similarly, teeth we need for biting. It's always good when you discuss a symbol, good to start with this very, very simple function and then go from that. So we bite with our teeth so that we can digest. And if you're like those of you who have had any tooth problem or lost teeth, you know that is awful. You discover most of the food can be hard and you have to take only just gruel stuff. And so biting into something, then you think of language. how many words there is about bite. Sound bite, of course, very important nowadays, but bite into something. You bite more than you can chew. So it has to do with chewing before you can digest. So when you have teeth falling in your dream, there's something going on that you won't have the instrument like the shoe, which can chew for the digestion, for the integration, for the integration. So many ways the integration come in. When we eat, we have to chew to eat our food so that you can digest it properly. And so that's the integration part. So I'm just thought of teeth as we're talking about shoes. It's one of those things which are very simple, very obvious, but have profound connections, symbolic meaning. So anyway, and since she's drawing it, it's of course her story. It's her, what she sees in it. So from outside we might not all see what exactly she's seeing, but it has a tense personal implication as well. That's why the stories are so beautiful. You take what you want to take from the story. Any other?
I found myself seemingly to not be paying attention to the story. I know that.
Seemingly is a good word.
I know that, but I really entered the story at the moment when the word vortex.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you say the word vortex, and then my imagery began, and that's the piece that I drew of the fiery water and the vortex was like the maelstrom, the chaos of the time of not knowing for myself when I begin to enter something new and go away from the old. And the shoes were very important in my little image as the gift that comes from being in the unknown place.
Mm-hmm.
To allow myself to then just be there
mm-hmm.
in chaos. And when I can allow myself to be there in the unknown, in the chaos, there is something to reach to. There will be a next place to go.
Good. Do you want to show the picture or it's not just personal? Oh, fairly big shoes there.
Very important. I pulled out the brownish crayon and thought, oh, I like this color, but I had no idea what it was for. Instead of the sky, and I was into the gold and all the colors. And then, that's the color of the shoes. So.
You also drew something like a fountain, you know?
Yeah,
and the story is called Fountain of Tree, a fountain of life, or is it some other story? Isn't there a fountain?
No, there was a
fountain.
Fountain,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the tree was the tree.
Yeah. Fountain is a fantastic symbol, too. It's tremendous energy.
I've known this for, long before I can put any of these words or conceptions to what happened to me internally, but since I was young, could feel a place inside that had no words, but there was always a sense of both going very deeply in
and coming out.
Always was moving
mm-hmm.
out of it.
Great. Why do we need books, concepts, workshops, lectures, and particularly books? Or sharing with each other, talking about things. Talking, words, really in the center of everything. Even the analysis and therapy is mostly with words. Not always, but mostly. And I think many of us who came to Jung via other routes and from other fields, other subjects, we often, and most of us did, I think everybody, we often found Jung very interesting, attractive, because he said things which we felt already and we have gone through. That's the very typical reaction to reading Jung. If it hasn't happened, then Jung is impossible to read, impossible to understand. And many people who picked up Jung at some point dropped it and then later picked it up when the time was right because they have gone through something which he is talking about. So he's giving the names to the experience. And that's why not many people, I'm not saying Jung was the only one. Other people might find it in Einstein, or might find it in Eliot, or find it in Joyce, or whoever. So it has to be a symbolic expression of somebody who has gone through something. And Jung somehow captured some of the unlabeled, unnamed experiences that we have all gone through. So, and he said at some point that anybody who suffered in life would find my words meaningful. So I would say perhaps all of us have suffered, but either we repressed it or did not want to feel it or didn't want to name it, felt confused in it, felt chaotic. And he then comes along and says, chaos is fine because after that comes the rebirth. So that's very appropriate. Okay, any other?
I had a very adolescent response to the male and the female. And because I had something that had happened last week when I was in Arizona with all of my engineers, very tired of being with their science and being a blonde poet in their midst that they don't even know about. So I'm still acting out last week. So I said, I hate guys who go looking for gold trees wearing gold chains. But I love women who know when to leave holding secret treasures. And I hate men who listen to jealous trapping women. But I love women who hear one hand clapping. I hate happy endings that are all sugar-coated and lollipop thin, even when the queen gets her due. But I love old men and Yoda Ninja Turtles when they guide through forest skins. And last week when I was dealing with these men, one of them, well, the head of engineering, told me for the 20th time that it was probably time to look for another manager of technical publications because he's never sure I can get it done.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like, oh, so I wrote this for him. Techno-literal linear math men that harness vertical airwaves, discern the property of air mass displacement, and command bolted slabs of metal to speed ballistically above the clouds, beyond where hawks and eagles bother. They think themselves lords of Valhalla, Odin's smug face in the 20th century, the only chosen ones challenged by lofty pursuits, who posture and bray as if all that they were was all that was required. Yet when they touch down from cruising the altitudes, take the three-point landing, right foot, penis, left foot, and remember the diet, the dirt beneath their toes on which the divine forces placed them, they babble in unfinished grunts and gestures about four-wheeling the mud flats and mesas, then drink to excess, fart, beat the women and children, and go to war to save the price of oil. So when I, the poet, am discovered schmoozing among their ranks, describing their lateral lines, transcribing their lateral lines into exalted pilot prose, they bellow in feigned indulgence that the idiot savant, at the idiot savant in a skirt, and I record their hubris for posterity.
Ballistic, all these words are incredibly sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You mentioned it several times, and I didn't intend to do any personal work necessarily, but I have to say, I have to make a comment. Why are you in this?
Why do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
Because it pays the bill.
Yes, but you have to sacrifice something.
Well, I did. I sacrificed. I raised the children. They're gone.
No. When you are feeling so angry with these men, uh-huh. These men are carrying a projection of a tremendously angry animus inside.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you have to rescue that animus and let him resign from that job, literally and metaphorically. Sounds to me like, I don't know you, but sounds to me like you're so upset with the situation, and yet you're telling yourself, this is the only job I can have.
Oh, no. Not yet. I mean, I'm getting beyond that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But why are these men so terrible for you? See, they're getting a lot of angry projection. They may be bad people, But they're getting a lot of angry projection, tremendous amount. And I hear an angry man inside who is, you know, going on to them. And since you don't know me, I don't know you, so I can say and get away with it and get away. But I don't think you're, well, I don't think your friends would say it to you. I don't know whether you are in therapy, but it sounds to me like a classical case of the animus who's saying, let me go, let me go. Yeah. And that would be the, whether you leave the job or not, but these men don't deserve that kind of emotion. You have an enormous emotion just wasted on these men.
Yes.
You're giving them too much of a, but very nicely done, a lot of emotion. The language. Okay, any other?
Something that's just sort of hovering out of reach that I'm not quite remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, when I went away by myself, I had a sense of peace that I haven't had for a while. And a kind of welling up of reassurance for myself in the process of facing something very difficult and potentially pretty devastating. If I stayed where I've been. So I wrote for myself what the image brought up for me in the story, in terms of that it's difficult for me to allow myself to make mistakes, not be perfect.
Yeah.
And to think that somewhere down the line, if I haven't recognized my highest value or what is of value to me and I've banished it and thrown it away or not acknowledged it and recognized it, but I'll never find my way.
Yeah.
So the story was providing that kind of reassurance that in fact there is a way.
Mm-hmm.
And the way seems chaotic. Planting the branch.
Oh, the golden branch.
Mm-hmm. The branch. And then to a picture, remembering this, one of the memories I had of when I was a child was watching this girl, I must have been five, watching this girl in my church that I thought was really pretty important person. And she was dressed like Mary. It was Christmas time. And she had on this flowing blue. It probably was so simple, but to me, my memory of it is just this. I remember, when I remembered it, I just had goosebumps all over my body.
Like a goddess.
And that color comes up in my drawings constantly as the feminine, the reassuring.
But that's Mary, isn't Mary wore blue?
Yeah.
So
but
that's.
I haven't connected that.
But that's your inner God, that's your inner image. Great.
So I did the little drawing of Mary.
Father very much. Thank you. See, this is how sometimes the divine appears. And also for her, the little she told, shared with us, it had to come from something from her past, from her tradition, which was rejected at some point. And like that frozen gods in the Ziploc bag, they remain and they wait for the time to reappear. Archetypes never dies, it's always around. And unconscious, you said something about devastation. And von Franz often talked about that, that what we, the face we show the unconscious shows us. So if we call the depression pathological and dangerous and try to medicate it, then of course depression gets worse. So if we treat whatever comes to us from the unconscious with respect, even when it's illness, even when it's painful, then chances are the healing would be much more easier. And it's like we do not have to, we constellate. The word constellation means we provoke by using the attitude, we provoke their similar reaction. The face you show the unconscious will show you back. So when you have a nightmare and you get scared, very scared, and you keep it out of your reach and don't even write it down and constantly worried about it and leave it away, you'll have chances that you'll have the same nightmare until you begin to look at it differently. Nightmares are usually strong messages from the unconscious. And we wake up usually when you are falling down a cliff or having a plane crash or whatever the nightmare is, or somebody's dying in front of our eyes, and we wake up, the ego can't stand it, even in a dream. And so often people stop at the point they're going to hit the bottom. It's a very common image. But the same nightmare is repeated until you realize that it doesn't have to do with my dropping from the cliff. It has to do with something is going to happen, either to make me fall from grace, fall from heaven, fall consciousness, or it could be that I'm hanging on to something I shouldn't. I have to drop, or the fate is going to drop me. So that's another reason why nightmares in most, when you work with dreams, after a year or so, people don't have those nightmares anymore once they begin to look at it differently. So the fear of something unknown is understandable. But if we take it this way, unknown is unknown by definition. And when it's supposed to be known, things are going to appear and then we have to go with it. But once you're in touch with your lady in the blue or your self, whatever self-image is, it's not as scary to go to the unknown. It's like putting on the shoes of the hermit to go into the hot water. And each one of us have to find our different tool. It could be a boat, it could be a pair of shoes, it could be the image which is hanging in front of you, or it could be some other symbol, some other item. But we take something with us to go into the hot water.
What do you recommend we say to our children when they come out of nightmare?
Ask them to tell you the story, tell you the dream.
And
by the time they tell it, they would slowly get out of it, and you pay attention to, just like your therapist does to you when you tell a dream. And it's like children love to be scared. Have you seen children asking for ghost stories? And they know much more than we think they know that this is a story. They love to get into, they're much more eager to get into the feeling of it. When a child wakes up and says that I see a wolf under the bed, and most modern parents would put the light on and say, see honey, there is no wolf. And that's definitely the wrong thing to do. You have to sit with the child and say, okay, tell me. And of course there are rules. Get the imagination going, and fear is part of one's imagination.
That's what even in the day after the nightmares or anything, what I end up saying is things are scary.
Sometimes.
Things are scary sometimes, and that's the fact of life. There is good in it, bad in it, black in it. Is that appreciated approach?
Well, I don't know whether you need to separate the black and white, because they're in a time when they want to imagine things. Some are in the shadowy area. That's what imagination is. It doesn't polarize. They will have enough black and white when they grow up. So maybe right now they want to think a dangerous wolf is also fun, is also scary, but fun scary. And they're attracted to it. That's why so many monster movies are so popular. See, they know it's safe, but at the same time they can go with it and feel... It's the adults are much more worried about the wolf under the bed than the children are, really. They want to get rid of it because they don't know how to handle it, because they're so rational. They say, oh, it doesn't exist, but how come the kid is seeing it? And, of course, some adults are even worse. They take the child then to the psychiatrist. Oh, something wrong with that child who is constantly seeing all these things. Children are imaginative. They are in a border between the real and the unreal. They dream, they imagine, and it's wonderful. Alice in Wonderland, have you read Alice in Wonderland? That's the children's world. And if adults cannot go into that, at least they have to respect it and hold it and attend to it, not to ignore it or not to condemn it either. Okay, any other? The snake came.
The snake has gotten more luminous. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the dream it was very luminous. And so then I put it on the paper. And I didn't finish it because it wasn't time, but
the big,
the snake with blue eyes.
Beautiful. This is incredible because on my last birthday, I invited four friends, and one friend made a snake for me from clay, baked it in the oven, and the way he made it was exactly the way your snake is drawn. And another friend who came to the party brought me a turtle. And turtle is very small, about this small, and almost the same proportion. So what I did, I put that snake in my practice in a lovely dish, and in that coral I put the turtle. So when you were showing me the picture, I thought that's exactly what I did with these two real turtle and snake. Now here's a concrete example, and of course there's synchronicity also, and that's the concrete which is not literal, because as I tell the story, for me it was of course very important. Two friends brought me two animals. And both animals are very full of symbols, you know. One is turtle, very primordial. Snake is also millions of symbols attached to the snake. And then somebody in this workshop draws something which is exactly the same thing. So you can see how the same concrete thing has so much more to it, the connection, because we are both sharing certain archetypal connections, certain unconscious connections. It's also interesting to me, in every workshop I have done so far, no matter what the topic is, one or two snakes will always appear. Snake is our primordial part of our psyche. The reptilian brain, snake is one of the coldest, oldest animals in evolution. And somehow, since we are touching so many parts of our psyche, then this one animal appears. And of course, it's the par excellence symbol of healing, symbol of self-rejuvenation, things we are talking about, rebirth. Snake is the only animal which can rejuvenate itself by shedding its skin. And it's also poisonous, but snake's poison is used for medicine. So it's the paradox incarnate. It's in the shape, it can be very phallic, and it can be also very feminine. It's all sorts of things in the snake. So it's interesting that we touched, or the work touched somewhere deep at that level.
What about being bitten by a snake in the dream?
You remember the dream I talked about last night. So something has to do with poison. And when we have a poison in our system psychologically, a snake is biting also to put the poison into our system. And that poison can be healing in some ways too. In dreams, something is biting you, is biting you. There is no control.
No.
Ego has no way to change it.
Right. I had a dream recently where I had a snake bitten me too, just you. And the next thing I knew was I just took it to the fact that this is my own.
Yeah.
But I could do nothing about it. But then after that, people will prefer it. The thought was, I am now preferred.
So maybe you're being liked more now because you are contaminated by something negative now, poison, healing poison. You wanted to point out the time, or you want to? Yes. Okay. So those of you who didn't have time or wanted to do it, perhaps you can just do it yourself. And I presume you didn't desperately want to do it; otherwise, you'd have done it. And so I don't know how to round off because we have gone in so many different directions. I think just to round off a little bit, to say that we have been talking about initiation. And initiation happens not only in different stages of life, in age, but also every single day in our life if we have that kind of approach to it. We don't have to call it initiation. Any new experience, any separation, and any confusion always is followed by a reincorporation or reintegration. So if you keep that in mind, and if you keep the symbolism in mind, not literal, I think your initiations are going to be fine. And death is not going to be a threat. Okay? Thank you.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CG Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.